From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. It's the holiday season, if you haven't noticed, which I think is a great time to curl up with loved ones, maybe by yourself too, if you want some downtime just on your own, and watch something great on TV or film. And here to give us some ideas is our resident movie critic and Morning Edition host, George Prentice. George, I just love when I get to spend time with you.
Happy holidays. I've got something for home. I've got something for the theater, and I most certainly have something to curl up with.
Okay, perfect. So let's start with a new documentary that you're recommending.
Well, yeah, Gemma, you know, in this space, we like to be part of the big conversations, you know, talking about the big award winners or possibly jumpstart conversations. And we'll do that in just a bit. But Gemma, you and I also like to elevate films that we think of as hidden gems. And I've got something up first that I'm really excited about. It is called In a Different Key, and you will be able to see it next week on Idaho Public Television. Gemma, I think you and I can relate to this, and that is, I know I have friends, I'm going to guess you might as well, parents of special needs children, and how what really keeps them up at night is worrying about what happens when they get too old or possibly pass away, and what happens to their child in adulthood. And that is at the heart of In a Different Key. It's a documentary where a mother tracks down the first person ever diagnosed with autism. She is mother of an autistic child, and her fear is about what happens when I'm gone. And she finds this man in his 80s, and his name is Donald Triplett. And in 1943, he was deemed case number one on what is now called autism spectrum disorder. And because he is in his 80s and has no living relatives, and he lives in a very small town in Mississippi, what she found was that this town is his home. Let's take a listen.
Once you've been around him, it's just difficult to not want to pull for him and root for him. And in a community like Forest, one reaction that Don evoked from the townspeople was that, yeah, Don's got some odd behaviors and some eccentricities, but he's our guy, and we don't want to see anyone take advantage of him or manipulate him or harm him in any way.
Donald gave me hope, but I don't know that I knew that at the time, but I was just so drawn to him and this community. I wanted to figure out, how did they get it right? Because they really did get it right.
And that is Karen Zucker, a journalist with ABC News, a producer for years. And she reached out to a partner of hers. And I think our listeners may know John Donvan from ABC News, who also has a relative who has an autistic child. And they wanted to explore this issue of what happens when someone is too old and they have nowhere to go and yet is, for lack of a better word, you know, completely mobile and functional, but you don't ever want them taken advantage of. So they together wrote an article for Atlantic Magazine. It turned into a book In a Different Key, and now it has turned into a one-hour documentary. And here they are, and this is Karen Zucker and John Donvan talking about their experience.
Very first. And we tracked him down. We did some sleuthing a long time ago now.
Yeah, it was very interesting when we got to his hometown, the small town in the middle of Mississippi, when we reached out to people to say, would you talk to us about Donald?
What we saw right away was that he had a community. And we knew that because when we asked to meet him, they basically told us, sure, we'll introduce you to Donald, but if you mess with him in any way, we will track you down and we will get you. They did. They totally did. And then they embraced us because we embraced him.
And we got the wonderful thing. Donald, one of his habits in life is he signs numbers to people, kind of randomly, it seems. And if you make a real connection with Donald, he gives you a number. So I'm pleased to introduce you to number 549.
He's 550. And I say that because I think Donald figured out he's older than me.
That's great. That's Karen Zucker and John Donvan. And again, you know, the lesson here is that every community can be part of a solution for supporting people, in this case, people on the spectrum, including where they work, where they live, where they go to school and beyond. This film touched me. I think it touches audiences that don't necessarily have that direct connection to autism. It is called In a Different Key. It is certainly family friendly, but if you're a parent, actually, if you just love film and documentary and good stories, you will not soon forget In a Different Key. It airs December 13th on Idaho Public Television. Do not miss In a Different Key.
It sounds lovely, George. And I think, you know, this idea of taking care of one another, it seems in so many ways we've gotten so far away from that over the last few years. Mm-hmm. So just this idea of community coming together, what a lovely thought, and how beautiful for this time of year.
And isn't that probably the number one fear of those parents? Right?
Absolutely.
What happens when I'm gone? What happens when I'm gone? Well, that's a really good question. Let alone the fact that they found the very first person officially diagnosed with autism in the United States, patient number one. It's a fascinating story.
Okay. I want to spend some of our time together today, George, talking about a movie that you have been talking about. It's called Women Talking. You're saying you think this is going to be one of the most talked about films of the whole year.
Without exception, if not probably the Best Picture Oscar winner. It's between Women Talking and The Fablemans. Women Talking is a drama. It's a heavy drama written and directed by the amazing Sarah Polley. It is based on a novel of the same name. I'll say this right up front. The cast is, oh my goodness, Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, Jesse Buckley, Judith Ivey, Ben Whishaw, Frances McDormand. It is really something. And the cut line on this is that a number of women from an isolated Mennonite colony have to reconcile their reality with their faith after it is revealed that men from their community drugged and raped the community's women at night for years. The film begins. It is not a violent film, although we know that violence has taken place before the film begins. And all of the men have been arrested and are in the town. The sheriffs have come and arrested all the men in this village. And the women are alone in this barn, in this hayloft. And they have to decide one of three things. Do we stay and do nothing? Do we stay and fight? Or do we leave? When in fact, they really don't have anywhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And their faith tells them to stay. As a matter of fact, quite often their faith tells them to stay and do nothing. But it's a fascinating story. So this film, I've been looking for the right word to describe this film. And, you know, when someone tells you, oh, this is an important film, it's a little bit like they're wagging their finger at you. But this film is on a different plane. And I keep thinking of films like Philadelphia. Or Do the Right Thing, or Gentleman's Agreement, Coming Home. There's very few films in this space. And what's interesting is the novel is so self-contained, and when you read it, it's a wonderful novel. But you're thinking, well, this can't be a movie. It takes place in a hayloft. But, in fact, Sarah Polley has elevated this film into an epic. It is beautiful. It's big, it turns out. And it's really something. So, yes, I was at the world premiere of Women Talking at the Toronto Film Festival. As a matter of fact, the night before the big premiere, I was at a special media screening when Sarah Polley and Frances McDormand and Claire Foy and the entire cast came in to talk to us. And I had an opportunity to ask Sarah Polley a question about this experience. And when you listen to her and when she talks about moving from rage to hope, when she talks about, yes, we can talk about all the things we want to tear down, but we can also do something about our future. Let's listen.
You know, as a woman in general, you've had really, really difficult, possibly traumatic, damaging experiences in this world. And the idea of moving through the rage, unpacking it, reckoning with it, and finding or thinking about or having the courage to imagine a remedy or a different world, or just the imagining of something else, as opposed to just talking about what we want to tear down, to talk about what we want to build, was enormously hopeful and helpful. And the novel did that for me, as it did so many women, I think, was just to allow your imagination to expand beyond the confines of the personal experience and of the damage, and to look forward.
It's so interesting. Sarah Polley talks the way some poets write. There's such richness in her answer. I very quickly, in the dark, I was trying to write down little scenes from the movie in my notebook in the dark, and I wrote down a couple of scenes. So there are no clips of women talking out yet. So let me just say this, that the film will open in New York and Los Angeles on December 23rd. That's probably when you'll start hearing interviews on NPR and all of the late night shows, because it will be Oscar eligible. But I'll be darned if we're not going to be ahead of this curve. And we're going to talk about this film, because everyone's going to be talking about this film as it slowly rolls out and will come here to Idaho, if not over the holiday season, shortly thereafter. And when it does, it's going to be, oh my gosh, you have to see this film. So this was a scene between Frances McDormand's character, who is devout, and she thinks that they should stay and do nothing. And she's talking to one of the younger women. And her Frances McDormand's character, the older character, says, "Does entering the kingdom of heaven mean nothing to you?" To which one of the other women answers, "Surely there must be something in this life worth living for, and not just the next." Wow. And Gemma, when you and I think about the stories that we have covered here in Idaho, in particular in regards to faith healing and the number of children young children who have been buried way too soon because they were not given medical attention because of someone's faith. We're not wagging a finger here, but we are saying that these are conversations that are very, very, very real here in Idaho. You know, when someone says, "Does entering the kingdom of heaven mean nothing to you?" But the answer is amazing. Surely must be something in this life worth living for.
It's this thing, George, where I have so many conversations, in particular with my oldest, who's 14, about faith, right? And that we tend to see it as black and white, right? Good and bad.
Yeah.
And I always say to my son, I go, we live in shades of gray. Like, that's where we live. And so I'm wondering if that is what this, just with that comment, it's just like, wow.
Absolutely. And the one thing I did not expect, and I am not going to spoil this film for you, the one thing I did not expect was to also come away from this film with amazing hope. And there is, here's another line from one of the characters. "Hope for the unknown is good. It is better than hatred for the familiar."
That is powerful.
That's almost poetry. "Hope for the unknown is good. It is better than hatred of the familiar." So that is some of the source material that Sarah Polley had to work with. So Claire Foy was there, and she spoke a little bit about the very first moment that she got a look at the script, and that's how she decided to want to be a part of Women Talking. Let's listen.
The script, I felt, was like nothing else I'd ever read, in the sense that it was a story from beginning to end. There wasn't a lot of kind of separate scenes with stage direction. It wasn't filled out like a lot of movies is, where it basically tells you what to think and feel when you read it. There was so much space in it, it felt. But also there was a lot of dialogue. And I even said to Sarah, I said, you know, this reads to me like a play. And she's really brave, I think, that she basically knew that you couldn't take the theoretical argument and also the personal argument of these women, like the conversation that they're having. You couldn't try and strip it back and make it just visual. It wouldn't work.
But indeed it does. And Women Talking is a big film. What's so interesting is that not one of these stars would you consider to be eligible for Best Actress, because how could you do one and not eight, right? This is the ensemble of ensembles. And if you know the Screen Actors Guild, they do not give out a Best Picture Award. They give out the Best Cast Award.
Oh, right? That's right.
And it has to be Women Talking. And keep in mind that the largest voting membership in the Motion Picture Academy are the acting membership. So tons of nominations for this film, certainly the screenplay. I can't wait for people to talk about it or to see it, because I can't wait to listen to those conversations. It's called Women Talking, and I haven't felt this way about a movie in quite some time. In spite of the fact that I'm an old white man, I could relate to this film in so many ways, and I think that people will be surprised at where they will be able to plug into this movie. It's Women Talking, and I know as soon as you see it, you'll want to tell someone else.
I have a feeling it's going to be one of those movies, George, that I see and then I text you, and George, you were so right.
Oh, wow.
All right. So how about we wrap things up, George, with you have an assignment for people?
A Christmas movie assignment. I think we all have our favorite Christmas movies, right? And the list gets a little longer. I think Elf has probably joined the list, of a must-see. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's, White Christmas or whatever. Well, one movie has really gained in popularity, and it's been 20 years. I really had to pinch myself to think of that. It's been 20 years since it came out. So here's my assignment. I want our listeners to watch just the opening minute of this movie one day. And you can just see it on your phone, watch it on your phone or whatever, or curl up. But then don't watch the movie for 24 hours. Let this 1 minute sink in, because for my money, it is one of the best openings of any movie ever. Let's take a listen. I think you'll know what it is.
Okay.
Whenever I get gloomy with the state of the world, I think about the arrivals gate at Heathrow Airport. General opinion's starting to make out that we live in a world of hatred and greed. But I don't see that. Seems to me that love is everywhere. Often it's not particularly dignified or newsworthy, but it's always there. Fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, husbands and wives, boyfriends, girlfriends, old friends. When the planes hit the Twin Towers, as far as I know, none of the phone calls from the people on board were messages of hate or revenge. They were all messages of love. If you look for it, I've got a sneaky feeling you'll find that love actually is all around.
Love actually, right?
20
years since that movie came out, and I do believe...
Wow.
You almost don't want to let the movie begin. You want to pause for a moment and let that really soak in. And if you ever get down in the world, by the way, you could do the same thing at the Boise Airport when you see people coming off the planes and someone's there with a sign and the hugs are just that much tighter, etc. You get a tear to the eye for all the right reasons. It's a great Christmas movie. It's an amazing cast when you think about it. Everyone from Liam Neeson to Hugh Grant to and then a lot of stars in the making, right? The young Keira Knightley. Oh, my gosh. It's a lovely movie. And by the way, if you're looking for Love Actually on cable news and you can't find it, you're not trying too hard. It's everywhere.
it's everywhere.
Everywhere. So enjoy the film. I think a lot of people do watch it at Christmas time, but I challenge you to just watch the opening and then just go watch something else and then enjoy the movie the next day. Because let that soak in. Love actually is everywhere.
I love that, George. And it's, once again, so profound. What a thing to do this time of year. Okay. So watch the first minute.
Yep.
And then stop and watch it 24 hours later.
Yes.
All right. I can do that. That's an easy assignment.
Yeah. You can do that on your phone too. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Well, as always, George, such a pleasure to have you with us.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.